For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to another episode of Revolution Recap, coming to you after the New England Revolution, who are officially eliminated from playoff contention before they even stepped on the field Saturday because of Friday night's results, defeated Atlanta United 2-1 in the Revolution's last home game of the season. Designated player Giacomo Rioni, making his first start for the Revolution, opened the scoring with his first ever goal for the Revs on a 32nd-minute penalty kick. But the Revolution looked headed for another collapse in classic 2022 fashion when Joseph Martinez equalized for Atlanta in the 81st minute on a fantastic volley. Fortunately for the Revs, Gustavo Bo saved them with a game winner in the 85th minute, which was his first goal since July. So both Revolution designated player strikers got on the score sheet for the first time this season, which was good news, but maybe too little too late for the Revs. I'm Sean Donahue, and joining me today is Tanner Ribello of Trifecta Sports. Tanner, how's it going?
Doing well. Got the home season in the books for the Revolution. Finished off with a win, so it's solid.
Yeah, it was a nice way to kind of close out the home schedule on what's been otherwise been a pretty frustrating season. I know we've got some things to talk about in this one. Let's jump right into our key takeaways, which are brought to you by our friends at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at AnyRebellion and on their website, anyrebellion.org. Tanner, what was your key takeaway from this one?
I think it showed exactly what the Revolution could be. You know, this was a fairly healthy lineup for the Revolution, more of a choice lineup with the exception of Ryan Spalding playing in for the injured DeJuan Jones. You had Veroni in his first MLS start. You had Nacho Hill in his first MLS start. You had three DPs on the field for the first time since March 5th. So this was the closest we've seen to a fully fit Revolution team. Obviously, you don't have players going full 90. I think Veroni went 75 minutes or so, but you had a starting lineup at least that was pretty complete. So it was an opportunity to really see what this team can potentially be capable of. Obviously, they're not going to have a ton of chemistry because some of these players haven't played a ton of minutes together, especially Veroni. But, you know, we saw a team that came back. You know, they conceded a late goal, and it was an incredible goal by Joseph Martinez. And 4 minutes later, Gustavo Bo scored the game winner. And we hadn't really seen that from this team all year. They showed some spirit. They fought back. I think the Revolution have had unfortunate injuries this year, and it's really plagued them, and it's really impacted the way they can handle themselves tactically, and they never really found what they're particularly good at because of the injuries, which started right from the jump with Matt Turner missing the first couple months with that foot injury, and it continued throughout with players like Gustavo Bo or Giacomo Veroni or Ismael Tesori-Schrodi coming over injured as well. So they've really been plagued by injuries, and I think this game showed us that the Revolution are capable of being a good team. You know, the fact that they led MLS this year in points drop from a leading position tells you that this team can get a lead, and getting a lead in soccer is very difficult. So I think they're a good team, and I think it should lift people's spirits going forward that the fact that, hey, when they're healthy, they can win games at home.
Yeah, I agree. I think it should lift people's spirits. At the same time, it's probably somewhat frustrating to see, hey, this is what actually we could have had out there if, you know, players had been healthy. So that was kind of two ways to look at this one. But, you know, you brought up a good point, is they've had the most points dropped from a winning position this season of any team at MLS. We've talked about that before. And, you know, when you saw them give up that amazing goal to Joseph Martinez, I think there was really a thought of, oh, no, here we go again. So it was somewhat refreshing to see them actually fight back, especially kind of given the way they've collapsed in even recent weeks, to see them fight back and get the win in this one and, you know, show that there's still some spirit. And, you know, it certainly seemed like the Revolution wanted to close out their home schedule with a win, despite the fact that this was, you know, a pretty meaningless game as far as, you know, playoff positioning or anything like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Giacomo Veroni, after the game, he had a quote scoring his first goal. But, you know, he said after last night when they saw that the Toronto-Miami game didn't go their way and they were eliminated from the playoffs, that, you know, they were mad after that as a team. You know, they wanted to go out and do and win. And I think that it's important to see that this team is at least knowing that, yes, they're eliminated, but there is an importance of finishing strong and not giving up. So I think if they're able to, you know, they won this game, can they win the next game and really finish the year strong? And that could be a good building block going forward. But if they can also put out a pretty choice lineup as well in the next game, at least you have two games finishing your year where you may see what you have on this side. And maybe that can determine offseason moves as well.
Yeah, and that kind of takes me to my takeaway, which was, you know, we've heard a lot of people that want to see Bruce play the kids, and I certainly would like to see guys like Esmer and Buck get more minutes in these last couple games. But I think based on what we saw this game and, you know, kind of going off of what you said, that Bruce is going to use, you know, he used this game and he's probably going to use the last game as more of a trial to see what he has on this team rather than playing the kids as some people would like. Because, you know, Buck and Esmer are going to be here next year regardless. You know, there's plenty of chance for them to play next year with, you know, the first team and Revs too. There's no question, I think, on whether or not those two guys are going to be back. Damian Rivera, maybe there's a little bit more question there. But, you know, Bruce knows he's got time with them. What Bruce doesn't necessarily know is, you know, whether or not Nacho Heal should come back next season. You know, what he has with Giacomo Vrioni, because he hasn't gotten to play much. What he has with Dylan Barrero, even, because he hasn't gotten to play much with his injuries, even though he's been playing a little bit more than Vrioni. And at the same time, kind of what his best formation is. Because like you said, he never really had the chance to kind of figure out tactically what worked best for the Revs. And we've seen Gustavo Bo play on the wing the past couple of games. And I think Bruce is trying to figure out whether that works. So I think he's using these last two games to really prepare himself for this offseason and, you know, who he needs to bring in, who he should let go, but also what the Revolution are going to do tactically next season. So they're in a better position going into next year than they were this year, where I think they started not really knowing what their best formation was and what they were going to do tactically, especially when guys like Adam Buxa, Matt Turner, you know, Tejan Buchanan leaving the offseason, kind of adjusting for that. So I think that's what we're going to see from Bruce Arena. I think we saw it in this game, and I think that's what I would expect to see in the last game, is that, you know, he's, like you said, he's playing to win, but he's also kind of playing to see what he has for next season and kind of answer some questions rather than give experience to Buck and Esmer. With that said, I would have liked to have seen Buck get some minutes in this game, but I think, you know, based on what you saw in this game, and that even includes bringing on Omar Gonzalez in the 87th minute to try to close out this game, and again, what was, you know, a meaningless result for the Revolution as far as playoffs, but I think that was a move that was, you know, instead of bringing on Buck to maybe keep attacking and see what he could bring, it was more of, hey, this is tactically what I'd like to do next year if we're in this situation, bring in another defender and kind of close out the game. Hasn't worked well for the Revs this season when they've done that. Worked in this game, and I think that's what we're seeing from Bruce, is, you know, really trying to answer some questions going into the offseason and answer some questions as far as what's going to work tactically next year, rather than what, you know, some fans would like to see, which is seeing Buck and Esmer and maybe Damian Rivera as well get more minutes.
Yeah, and I think even if you look at the substitutes that Bruce made, you know, he brought in Christian McCoon, he brought in Wilford Captoon, Omar Gonzalez, Dylan Barrero, Justin Renix. Like, these are players that may not be here next year. There's always that potential. And I think, you know, those were some of the moves that he made. He didn't go with, like you said, Noel Buck or Damian Rivera or Esmer. You know, he went with more older players. Yes, Renix and Christian McCoon are still younger, but they don't really know where they fit, right? Justin Renix did fairly well in a starting lineup type role. You know, he showed high effort, but I think with a fully healthy roster, what is Justin Renick's role? And I think it's interesting the fact that they subbed him into this game too. Not that they had a ton of options other than him, but I think it's still interesting to see.
No, but you bring up a great point. I think he's another guy that you know, you don't necessarily know whether he'll be here next season. I think Captoom's a guy you don't necessarily know whether he'll be here next season. I would guess that he's probably not. And maybe he actually wouldn't have played in this one if it wasn't for Polster potentially going down with an injury, but You know, these are the guys that there's a lot more question in Bruce's mind, I would say, about than there is about, you know, Buck and Asmire, who, again, are going to be here next year and probably for the foreseeable future and kind of have time to figure it out. And, well, yes, experience would be great for them. You know, Bruce, like you said, is kind of trying to win these games and I think trying to figure out exactly what he has for next season. And I do think we, you know, kind of learned a little bit about that from this game. I know we'll get into some questions about that. But I did want to talk a quick bit about the lineup that we saw in this one. First thing that comes to mind is Spalding, Ryan Spalding getting the start at left back. It seemed like he'd kind of been out of the picture for the Revs for whatever reason, that maybe Bruce didn't trust him because he'd been playing John Bell, who, you know, primarily been a center back for the Revolution since he came here. He played left back before, but since he's been with the Revs, he's been a center back. He'd been playing him at left back over Spalding. So it was interesting to see Spalding get the start today. What did you think of his performance, and what do you read into him being subbed out at halftime for Christian McCoon?
I thought Spalding looked okay. You know, this is his first start for the Revolution since April 9, so it's a very long time. Even with the second team, you know, Spalding wasn't actually starting a ton with them when he was down there coming off the bench, maybe going 45 minutes. So I don't know if he's necessarily 90-minute fit at the moment. I thought he looked okay. You know, I don't expect a lot out of Ryan Spalding. It's very tough to fill DeJuan Jones' shoes. I thought it was interesting that they didn't go with John Bell, but Spalding is a better fit in that position. I thought he was fine, personally.
Yeah, and the one thing I will say is if the Revolution do lose DeJuan Jones in the offseason, I don't think they have a guy on the roster ready to step up and fill his shoes, like you said, or, you know, even kind of come close to it, right? I think that would be – I haven't heard any rumors that he's going to be gone in this offseason, but there's constantly rumors about him, and I think that's a guy that if the Revolution were to lose, they'd need to bring somebody else in. It doesn't seem like the roster has that player on it currently, right?
Yeah, you know, it's worth noting. I just looked it up real quick. The last time Ryan Spalding was even able to go 90 minutes was August 14th. So it's been a while. So this is actually his longest run since that August 19th. That was for Revs too. So, you know, I think it's an interesting situation to look at, you know, that outside back, if they're going to move on from DeJuan or even Brandon Bye. You know, we hear rumors about people sniffing around those outside backs for the Revolution. If this is the offseason that they decide to move on from either of them, if there's an offer that's attractive to them, there really isn't anyone on the roster, right? You do have Ryan Spalding. McCoon can play outside back. So can John Bell, but I know Ben Rovino can as well, but that might be an area where they're going to have to, you know, make some type of move in the offseason if they move on from either of their two starters.
Yeah, I think that was a question that's still out there based on what we saw tonight. Nacho Hill got the start, his first start for the Revolution. What did you think of his performance? And he's obviously playing for a contract next season. He's just a short-term deal through the end of this year. You know, do you think he got closer to kind of earning another season with the Revs based on what we saw tonight?
I thought we saw a player that is good on the ball. He can make players miss. He also seems to be a tad physical. There's a couple different interactions with opposing players, but I thought overall Nacho Hill was pretty good for the Revolution. You know, I was actually kind of impressed. I wasn't expecting a whole lot out of him. I think he's in a tough situation where, you know, he basically has these two games here to now prove that he's worth a contract. I thought he looked fine.
Yeah, I thought he did too. And honestly, I did not expect much from him when the Revolution signed him. His statistics for the past couple seasons in the second division in Spain, not particularly impressive. But I think in the minutes he's had for the Revolution, he's looked pretty good. Did have two chances created in this one. 0.51 expected assists. You know, kind of that highlight nutmeg that the defender ended up winning, but was at the time was exciting. But, you know, he's a guy that is willing to take people on. And creative in the attacking half, and, you know, as kind of a depth winger, which is something the Revolution need. I think if they have, you know, the international spots to accommodate him next season, I think he's, you know, done his part to kind of at least give himself more consideration. I think if he plays well in the last game, that, you know, there's a good chance that the Revolution do bring him back next year. I really wasn't expecting much out of him when the Rev signed him, and he's exceeded my low bar by a decent margin so far. So very interesting, especially with Ismael Tajori-Shirardi not being available for the Revolution, and it seems like we're not going to see him this season. An opportunity for Nacho to play more minutes and show what he can do. On that note, really quickly, were you surprised that, you know, we heard this season from Bruce, or this week from Bruce, that ITS was, you know, injured coming to the Revs and that he didn't really know about the injury? That kind of shocked me that they traded for a guy and apparently didn't realize how injured he was.
That was incredibly shocking to me. You do have these instances in sports sometimes where you acquire a player and they come in and, you know, you have to do an entry level physical and all those types of things. And I do wonder when they found out how injured he was. Was it something that maybe they weren't really questioning, right, in the trade? Were they not doing their due diligence? Was the team that they acquired him from, were they not doing being straightforward with the Revolution? So I really do wonder, like, whose fault that is, because that's really, really bad. Now, I think it was really revealing that Bruce kind of said that, and obviously we saw Veroni, too, kind of come in banged up as well. So the Revolution certainly have some, I say, question marks when it comes to their acquisitions department at the moment. And they transferred out Sebastian Legette, and, you know, Ismail Tesori-Shradi was supposed to come in and kind of fill that spot in the lineup and ended up being injured. And I think that really did sink the Revolution season. I'm not saying he's going to come in and be great, but Sebastian Legette was a starting player for the Revolution, ended up paying his salary at FC Dallas. So I think that really was one of the things that caused the Revolution to start to take that slide in August and then fall out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I just wanted to quickly hammer home the point about Tesori-Shradi is that, you know, the Revolution, it's shocking to me, first of all, that they didn't know the extent of his injury. He's been out a lot for LA the FC this year. He hadn't played much. But on top of all that, you know, you're trading for kind of damaged goods, and you're trading $400,000 in general allocation money, plus potentially $200,000 in additional general allocation money if they re-sign him for 2024. And just to put that in context, LAFC traded for him this past offseason for $400,000 in general allocation money. So the Revolution were giving LAFC at least what they paid for him, and then potentially on top of that, an additional $200,000. And LAFC was desperate to offload him because of their offseason, or their midseason signings, rather, bringing in Gareth Bale, bringing in Chiellini, several other guys they brought in as well. So they were desperate to open cap space, open international roster spots, open senior roster spots. And they got a premium for him instead of the Revolution getting him at a discount. So when you factor in the injury on top of that, it kind of seems like LAFC fleeced the Revolution in this deal, right?
Yeah, and then you look at sort of the Legette thing, which I think you kind of have to look at it together, right? Because I think that was their plan, was we're going to move Legette, we're going to bring in Ismail Tesori-Shradi here. But they actually got they paid FC Dallas to take Legette, and then they overpaid for Ismail Tesori-Shradi. Even if he was a healthy player, there was a potential overpay there. So the whole trade deadline and their moves there were very interesting. And while at the end of the day, that's not why the Revolution are in the situation that they are, that is what caused them to not have a different path. You know, they were sort of headed to this path that they're at right now, but if they had made the right moves, they could have actually, I think, taken a step forward. But in reality, they've taken a step back after that trade deadline.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, because he was supposed to be, Tesori-Shradi was supposed to be the guy that kind of stepped in and potentially, you know, started for the Revolution and was that attacking guy when they kind of switched into, you know, more of a formation with wingers than what they were playing when they had, Legette was playing on the wing, but kind of a more of a natural winger than Legette. And instead, they got rid of Legette. They're paying his salary this season. And then they brought in an injured player that wasn't going to be able to play. Because you look at the other two transfer deadline moves, you know, McCone coming in, decent depth piece, but he was never going to be a guy that was going to be a regular starter and kind of push the Revs over the edge. And then, you know, backup goalkeeper in Diop. Obviously, that wasn't going to be the move that pushed the Revs into the playoffs. So, yeah, I agree. You know, they were already headed in that direction, but the moves compounded it. And it's, you know, kind of been two disappointing summer transfer windows in a row, and that this one kind of made the Revs worse. And last year, when they won the Supporter Shield and broke the record, so you can't complain too much, they had an opportunity in the summer transfer window to kind of make their roster a little bit better, potentially, and kind of push them over the edge for the playoffs, and they didn't sign anybody. So I think you could say it's been two disappointing summer transfer windows, and of course a disappointing winter transfer window when they brought in Altidore, who, you know, kind of petered out, and they had to move on from him this summer. Of course, he's coming back in the winter, and they have to figure out what to do about that. And Omar Gonzalez, who I think hasn't provided kind of the veteran presence as far as when he's on the field for the Revolution and kind of giving them another third option at center back. So, and then of course, Legette, who was playing decently well for the Revs and that they moved on from and, you know, didn't have to close out the season. So, Bruce, the GM, kind of let the team down a bit this season, even when you think about all the injuries and, Rioni, we still don't necessarily know what he's going to bring. Barrero looked good in small doses. But, you know, the Revolution's moves in the summer really didn't help them and kind of set them back a bit. And the moves in the winter weren't good enough either. So it's, you know, we'll talk a lot more about that in the offseason, but just kind of interesting this week to hear that they didn't really know about ITS's injury status when he went to the Revolution, and kind of shocking. Was there anything else in the lineup that surprised you? It was good to see Rioni get his first start. He certainly didn't look fit in the past previous few games, but it seemed like he was, you know, at least a lot closer to fitness in this one, right?
Yeah, I think Rioni looked good. You know, obviously he drew the penalty. He converted the penalty, so that was nice to see. Ultimately, it's just good to see him on the field and interacting with Carlos and then Gustavo. You know, it's a 23-year-old striker. Like, he's still young, and there is potential there, right? And I think they're just trying to figure out, is he the long-term future at striker, or do they need to make another move? But, you know, they're kind of stuck with him at this point, I feel like. So I thought he looked good. Went 76 minutes, so that's definitely a benefit.
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of questions about him, though. The one thing that concerned me, obviously it was great to see him get on the score sheet, but there was, you know, more than a couple times in this game where I don't think he necessarily made the right run for the Revolution. And I know a couple weeks ago Matt Doyle pointed out a situation where, you know, the Revolution were pushing forward and he was late to make a run out of the box. And I thought that was something that I saw from him a few times in this game. There was one point where Brandon Bai played Nacho down the wing and the Revolution had a chance to kind of break forward quickly. And it seemed like he kind of delayed his run and the Revolution had to, you know, Nacho had to kind of slow up the play because there was nobody to give it to in the box. And then there's a play in the second half where Carles got to the end line and played that pass across goal where he thought Rioni would be, but Rioni was kind of slow in making that run again and didn't get there in time. And, you know, what could have been a tap-in potentially for him. Does that concern you at all that he doesn't seem to be, you know, making the right runs? Or is that just a question of, you know, I struggle whether that's a question of, you know, his instincts as an attacker or whether it's a question of just being on the same page with his teammates. I'm not really sure yet at this point.
You know, I know Bruce after the game said that Rioni at the end of this shift today, he was showing that he was fatigued, and I agree with him. I think that for the last, you know, say 10 or so minutes of that shift, he was fatigued. I agree with you. I did see some runs that was sort of lackluster on his part. And I think that's more the fact that he is still trying to build that chemistry with his teammates. I think we saw with Adam Buchsen his beginning of his tenure with New England. I think the fact that Rioni was injured and not able to be on the field and practice at 100% for all that time, I think it really set him back. So I think it's really tough to judge him at this point. I really think you're going to figure out what he is next season. At least that's what I hope, right? I really do hope it's the fact that he's still building that chemistry, because if it's the lack of instincts, then you go back to that whole player evaluation and bring the wrong players in.
Right. And, you know, this was a guy that scored, what, 20 goals or whatever it was in Austria last season. So it's hard to imagine that he doesn't have the right instinct as a striker, but I do think that's still kind of an open question. And you know, maybe, again, with each week, his fitness should be getting better. So I'll be curious to see what he can do last week. And he's certainly a guy, even if you want to see the Revs play the kids, that I think we all want to see more from this season, both to get integrated with the team, to gain his fitness, and just to kind of know what you have going into next year. So those are kind of the things I wanted to look at in the lineup. We do have a decent amount of listener questions. Before we jump into listener questions, I wanted to take a minute to talk about the sponsor of this podcast, Galacho Kits. Galacho Kits is the go-to place to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home. The passion for the beautiful game doesn't have borders, and neither does the selection. And if you head to GalachoKits.com today, you can get 15% off your order using the code REVSRECAP. That's REVSRECAP at checkout for 15% off your order at Galacho Kits. If you're like me and already starting to get excited for the upcoming World Cup, but are not so excited about the current U.S. men's national team kits, which are quite underwhelming, as we talked about in the podcast 2 weeks ago, there are a ton of awesome vintage U.S. men's national kits that you can wear and feel a lot better about wearing than the current one. So with that, Tanner, are you ready for some questions?
Yes.
All right. So we got a couple of lineup questions. Anime Stoner wants us to compare this lineup today to what we think should be there next season. And Derek Terrell similarly says Bo is still a weapon. He strongly believes that the lineup that was used today or some similar variation can be successful next year with a full preseason. Do you think this is true, or do we need significant changes? So I think both these questions are basically, how much change from this current lineup do you think we need to see before next season?
I think the clear difference between this and a choice lineup, at least as of right now, is DeJuan Jones in for Ryan Spalding. But I think beyond that, ideally Dylan Barrero is going to be starting over Nacho Hill. I think the one question is Ismael Tejori-Schrady, where does he fit into this equation? Is Bo really going to be playing on the wing? So I think the lineup we saw today is the choice lineup as of what we know right now, outside of Ryan Spalding. But ideally, I think Dylan Barrero and Ismael Tejori-Schrady are going to be in the starting lineup to start the year. The question is, what does it look formationally? And I don't think the Revolution even know what it looks formationally at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's still something they're, you know, despite the fact that
Ismael Tuzeri-Shirogi is not available, I think they're still trying to figure out what they look like formationally now, in kind of in advance of next season, because I think they went into this season thinking that they were going to play in a diamond. And, you know, that's part of the reason why they went out and got Legette, because in theory, Legette, you know, fit into a diamond a lot better than kind of what they ended up playing with wingers. And then, you know, ended up finding that that didn't work out, especially with Adam Buxa not available, or with Gustavo Bo and Adam Buxa not available at the same time. So that's, you know, that's kind of the difficult thing is they don't necessarily know what the formation is, but I agree with you. Obviously, their ideal lineup has DeJuan Jones over Ryan Spalding, and I think if DeJuan Jones is gone, that, you know, I'm not sure that Ryan Spalding is the answer at left back. I think they need to go out and get somebody else. But I think ideally you keep Ryan Spalding and Brandon Bye for next year. I think as far as the ideal lineup next season, you know, your center back pairing might still be Andrew Farrell and Henry Kessler, but they need to bring in another center back. I don't think McCone, Gonzalez, or John Bell are good enough to be that third center back. And as Andrew Farrell gets older, and, you know, we've seen from Henry Kessler that injuries and, you know, for other reasons, he's unlikely to be available for every game, that you kind of need a third center back that can really step up and play at the same level as those two, because I don't think the other options can. So that's something that I think they need. But I think the big question is, like you said, Gustavo Bo at winger, is that what he's going to play next year? And, you know, on that note, Teal Forever says he likes the idea of Bo at winger in a one striker setup. What are your thoughts on kind of Bo playing out there, and how do you think he's played in kind of the past couple games in that role?
I actually like him out there. I think it adds an extra dynamic to the offense, rather than playing two strikers. I think he's good in space. He's good also in facilitation. He's also great on in shooting as well. I really do like Bo on the wing, but I feel like ever since he got here, they've been trying to figure out where is he best fit. And obviously it's been impacted by the personnel, whether they had Adam Buxa or didn't, or whether or not they had Carlos Seal when he was injured. So I think Bo, despite being here for a couple of years at this point, his role is undefined at this point. But I did like him out there on the wing. I think it makes more sense for him to be on the wing than being at striker.
Yeah, I agree with that. I struggle with the fact that, like you said, he's been here a few years now and you still don't know what his best position is. And, you know, he's probably only got one more year left. So he kind of need to figure that out. And, you know, he's definitely still a weapon. But I had the take a few weeks ago that I think that the Revolution, you know, might be better off moving on from Gustavo Bo. And I think he looked okay as a winger in this game. He obviously scored a great goal. But I also think, you know, there were times where he was uninvolved. And, you know, he's a guy that obviously doesn't have a lot of pace, and you can be a successful winger without a lot of pace, but that's also a nice thing to have as a winger. So he's not a natural winger. He's not a natural lone striker. You know, he plays well as a second striker off of somebody, but then you require the Revolution to completely shift their formation to find a way for that to work by either, you know, putting Carles Heel out on the wing instead of in the center, which I think is a bad idea because, you know, Carles does so much more when he's in the center and involved more, or kind of playing a diamond, which I think the Revolution tried and it didn't, you know, worked out at the end of last season, but clearly wasn't working this year. And then if you do that, then you can't really play Dylan Barrero as a winger, and you can't play, you know, Nacho or ITS as wingers. So I still don't know, like you said, you know, he's played different roles depending on the personnel that are available, but we still don't know what his best position is. And, you know, the other things that concern me are the fact that, you know, A, he's injured a lot. And B, when he's recovering from an injury, it takes him a long time to get back up to speed. What was it, you know, eight games or nine games after this injury before he finally scored? And then to start the season, I think it was something like six or seven games before he scored. It takes a while to kind of ramp up and find his form. And when he's not scoring, I don't know that he contributes enough to kind of justify his place in the field or his designated player tag. So, you know, he's signed through next season, but I still think that if the Revolution could find a way to move on from him, they could probably build a more balanced formation and use that designated player spot to better effect. Again, kind of assuming Giacomo Vrioni is healthy and can play as a lone striker up top. But I don't know about you, but that's kind of one of my big question marks going into next season is, you know, where does Gustavo Bo play? Is it as a winger? I think it probably has to be as a winger because I don't see the Revolution going back to a two striker system and kind of, you know, screwing over all their wingers on the roster at this point. But yeah, I'm still kind of on the boat that the Revolution might be better off if they could find a way to move on from Gustavo Bo and would have kind of a more balanced roster and a balanced formation without him next season, despite the fact that, yes, he is still a weapon, and yes, he can still score great goals at times.
Yeah, I think it could make their formation simpler, right, if you had a better fit at winger. I think that's a real question they're going to ask himself. He's 32 years old now. He's has 8 goals on the season, paces the team, but you're right, he's been injured off and on his entire tenure with the Revolution. It probably would make their team more simplistic, right, if they had a natural winger out there and a natural winger on the other side. And I don't know if Gustavo Boe necessarily warrants, right, that two-striker setup at this point. So they could use that DP slot elsewhere if they are able to move on from him, maybe in the defensive midfield. That could be an interesting solution for them. But I think it's all tough questions for them, right? The fact that he has been injured and they have invested so much into him. I think they have a lot of questions this offseason with this roster. I think Gustavo Boe is one of the big ones.
Yeah, and you know, one thing too is when he is playing as a winger, he's a very different winger than you know the rest of the guys we just named on this roster. So if he is out injured, you kind of have to change the way you play. Where you know theoretically, if you go from let's say ITS gets healthy, if you go from Barrero to him on the wing, you're probably not changing the way you play as much as you are if you go from you know Gustavo Boe to one of them on the wing or. You know, so that's one of the questions, or Nacho Heal, you know, on the wing. They're more kind of natural wingers than Gustavo Boas, and I don't know. It's that's a huge question in this offseason, but at the same time, he is signed through another year, and I don't know that moving on from him would actually be that easy, even if they wanted to. Also on the starting lineup, Broken Bill says, I thought today's starting lineup was one of the best in the Wild. Can we expect more consistent first string lineup next season? What are your thoughts on that? Obviously, I think a lot of that depends on the Revolution being healthy next season and whether we can see a more consistent starting lineup, right?
Yeah, I think number one thing is health, but also I would say, you know, the first month or two of the season, Bruce is probably going to be seeing what formation works, you know, what lineup works the best as well, what assortment of players. So I would hope that they're going to have a more consistent lineup next year. I don't think it could be any more inconsistent.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be more consistent unless everyone stays healthy. And I think it's important to point out, too, that even the year they won the Supporters Shield, it took Bruce a while to figure out what their best lineup was until, you know, late in the season did they kind of stick with that consistent 4-4-2 diamond. So I don't think Bruce was intentionally switching up the lineup a lot this year. I think it was the fact that, A, people couldn't get healthy, and, B, he didn't know what his best 11 was. But you would hope next year that he has a better sense of that and that better health allows it to happen. Porter says, let's say Rioni, Barrero, and Petrovic came in the January window rather than the summer one. What position would the Revs have finished in the East?
That's a good question. I think if you look at this team, the biggest reason why they're in this position is the fact that they couldn't close out games. I don't know if necessarily those players would help them close out games. I think the biggest thing that affected this team, well, there's a couple big things that affected this team, but it was Matt Turner's injury. And then it was transferring out Adam Buxa. And then you know, it was the injuries that occurred when they had the players come in, like Veroni and Barrero as well. So it's really tough to say, but you can't help but think that they'd be in a better position.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to imagine that if all those guys were here at the beginning, and again, healthy, there's no saying just because they came in the winter, they would have been healthy. Rioni still could have picked up the injury. Barrero, you know, probably still would have had some injuries. If Matt Turner was healthy, I think he would have been starting until, you know, even if Petrovic came in the winter, I think Matt Turner would have kind of started the rest of his time here until he went off to Arsenal too. So it all depends on health, but you know, like you said, I don't think those are the guys that necessarily would have stopped the Revs from the collapses they had, but I do think, you know, they'd probably be pushing for the playoffs. I'm still not sure if you have those guys and you have all the other injuries that you have, that the Revolution aren't still a low playoff seed instead of a high seed holding a home game. But it is, you know, it's an interesting thing to think about if those guys had come in earlier. But I guess you're saying if those guys had come in earlier too, you know, Rioni doesn't come in unless Books is gone. So you're saying it's an interesting hypothetical because you're probably saying what happens if you don't have Books at the beginning and have Rioni instead. And Books was the Revs' leading scorer up until today still because he scored, you know, 7 goals early on and was very hot at the beginning of the season. So, maybe they're not in that much different of a position at all.
you're probably right.
Charles Maddox says, how important is this offseason to rest and refocus on being competitive next season? And he also wants to know if the Revs should rebuild the back line and hold on to Petrovic. I think we would all agree that the Revolution should hold on to Petrovic. But do you think they need to rebuild the back line? And how important is the offseason to rest and refocus on being competitive?
I think the back line is a big question. If they're going to be interested in DeJuan Jones or not in terms of transferring him out. But I think Brandon Bye's position is pretty safe. I think Henrik Kessler's pretty safe. But I think the miles on Andrew Farrell I mean, the guy is such an Iron Man, right? You know, he did miss some time this year, but he's played so many games, and at some point you have to ask, when is it not going to be enough, right? Like, at what, some point his game's going to fall off, and they really are going to need depth behind them. But I don't think the starting back line needs to change if they come back fully healthy next year. I think if you can keep all those players, I don't think there's any need to upgrade or enhance your back line. I think one of the bigger issues with the back line was there's a lot of absences, right? Farrell missed some time, Kessler missed some time, obviously DeJuan's missed some time as of late, which forced players like John Bell or Mark Gonzalez to play. I really just think it's the depth on that back line that needs to improve.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that back line, again, they won the supporter shield with it and broke the record. I think what's very obvious is you can't rely on them being healthy for 34 games in a season. Plus, you know, CONCACAF Champions League, they're not making that this year, but Open Cup, whatever else. You need better depth. The drop-off, unfortunately, from the guys that are there this year to the backups is too big. The drop-off from, you know, DeJuan Jones to Ryan Spalding is too big. The drop-off from Brandon Bye to AJ De La Garza at this point in his career is too big. The drop off from Kessler or Farrell to whether it's Omar Gonzalez, John Bell, or Christian McCune is too big. And maybe Bell or McCune can step up a bit, and maybe Spalding can step up a bit. But that to me is the biggest concern, is that, you know, when one of those guys goes out, the drop off is too big. And I also think, you know, your backup to Brandon Bye can't be DeJuan Jones, because, you know, when one guy goes out, you can't have to switch two positions and have a different left back and then have a guy who's a left back playing right back. That to me is a problem, right? I don't know if you agree with me, but I personally think that your backup to Brandon Bye needs to be someone that's not DeJuan Jones. So when one guy gets hurt, you're not switching two positions.
Absolutely. I think DeJuan Jones is, he plays on the left side primarily, and that's where he should stay, right? You don't want to have your best backup to literally be the guy that's starting on the opposite side of the field.
Yeah, that's always been something that bothers me, is when your backup situation is moving one of your starters from one position to another position and then filling in that position instead, especially when DeJuan Jones has kind of proven himself to be. Last season, I think he was the best left back in the league. This season, I think there was a little bit of a drop-off in his play, but you know, it's not good to be moving guys around when you don't have to. A couple of Petrovic questions. James Downing also says, ultimately, the poor quality of the broadcast and rained out crowd made it a match that was pretty forgettable, though it was kind of felt like a win the Revs would have gotten last year. I agree with that. We talked about that earlier, about how, you know, the Revolution didn't collapse when they gave up that goal. They came back and scored, which is more of what we saw last year and less of what we've seen this year. So he wants to know, any thoughts on Twoman's mysterious tweet about Petrovic? The context there is Matt Doyle kind of tweeted out a joke about my Tottenham Hotspur gave up a bad goal today. And he tweeted out that they could use Petrovic instead of Hugo Lloris. And Twoman responded with that is that they may be too late, with an eye emoji, which I don't know what your thoughts about that were, but it seems to imply that there might already be a move coming for Petrovic as short as he's been here. Tail Forever also wants to know, is Petrovic gone this offseason? So what did you make of Twelman's tweet, which, you know, kind of came as a surprise right before this game?
You know, Petrovic, I think, has impressed all of us. You know, 22 years old, came in midseason. June 12th was his first game with the team. You know, he was in the organization prior to that, but he never played an MLS game until June 12th. He ends up winning the team MVP voted by the fans, the player's player voted by the players, right? So that tells you all you need to know. June 12th, he came in, and he won both of those awards. And yes, the Revolution weren't great, you know, this year, so there weren't really many options. But this is a player that has 7 clean sheets this year. He saved 4 penalties. I think it's minus 13 is his expected goals versus goals conceded. Essentially, he's played perfect soccer. You look at this game in particular, the goal by Joseph Martinez was a world-class goal, maybe one of the best goals in the league this season. So I think it's not a shock that the fact that Petrovic's value has gone up, right? And there's going to be teams in Europe that are looking to improve their goalkeeping situation. You know, and if the Revolution get an offer, I don't think any player's necessarily untouchable on his team. So I could see Petrovic being moved if the offer is right. I don't think they're going to be giving away for a low offer, but, you know, if it's $10 million, I have a hard time seeing the Revolution not saying yes to that kind of deal.
Yeah, I agree. I think the way he's played this season has been kind of eye-opening for a lot of people. You know, we've talked about it before, but you can make the case that they replaced Matt Turner with a goalkeeper that's actually a better shot stopper than Matt Turner. Now, there are some areas of his game that he can improve upon. Sometimes his judgment coming out for crosses isn't the best. I think his communication with the back line, and, you know, part of that might be the language, you know, needs some work. But I think that's, you know, when you have a full preseason, let's say he is back next year, I think that, you know, you'd expect that to improve a lot. But it would not surprise me if a big offer came in for him this offseason that the Revs couldn't say no to. I do think that would be pretty devastating to the Revs because, you know, you replace Matt Turner with a goalkeeper that has the potential to be better than Matt Turner. Doing that twice is doing that once is very unusual and shocking, and, you know, great job by the Revolution coaching staff and scouting staff to do it. But asking them to do that twice is a huge ask. And I think trying to replace Petrovic would be a very difficult thing for the Revs to do. And as we saw this season, the Revs season would have been a lot worse if they didn't have goalkeepers the quality of Matt Turner and Georgi Petrovic. But I don't know how you find it, kind of strike lightning a third time with the goalkeeper spot.
Yeah, I think it'd be very difficult to replace Petrovic. Like, it was very difficult to replace Turner, and they got kind of lucky in the fact that Petrovic not only was very good, but the fact that he was able to do it so quickly and come up to speed. Yeah, he does have some areas to work on, but he might be better than Matt Turner. And it's very hard for me to say that, but he might be better than Matt Turner, and he's younger than Matt Turner. In terms of replacing him, if they were to move on, you do have some internal options, but I don't necessarily think Jacob Jackson coming back from his injury is going to be a real candidate to start. If you look at the bench right now, you have Clement Diop, Earl Edwards Jr., Brad Knighton. So if you were to, you'd have to go from without the organization to find that keeper. I'm not putting it past them to be able to do it, especially if you get a hefty sum of, say, $10 million for Petrovic. Let's say that's the deal. You can bring in another international keeper. But it is going to be very difficult. You're probably not going to get the same level of performance. But if you're financially compensated for it and you can use that money elsewhere, you know, I'll bring in a keeper and then bring in somebody else with that money, I think you have to do it.
Yeah, and you did mention Petrovic winning the Revolution Team MVP. He also won the Players Player of the Year award. I don't have any question. I don't have any disagreement at all on him winning that. I think if the only other guy that you could probably make a case for is Carles Hill with his 7-goal, 14-assist season. But do you have any disagreement with Petrovic being the MVP and Players Player of the Year?
No, absolutely not. I think he has done his job as well as you could expect. I think Carlos has had some moments where he hasn't been as good or maybe as locked in. Certainly a lot of frustration, I think, for Carlos Hill this season, and rightfully so. He would be probably the second, like you said, but I think it was clear and obvious that Jordy Petrovic deserved this recognition from both the fans and the players.
Yeah, I completely agree. Defender of the Year, Andrew Farrell. Any thoughts on that one? Any disagreement?
I actually voted for Andrew Farrell. This is one of the this is the only media award we get to vote for. Last year, I went with DeJuan Jones, and I was close to going for DeJuan Jones again this year. Yeah, he took a step back. There's some obviously things he does better than Farrell, and there's stuff that Farrell does better than him. But the reality is, you know, it's a defender award. I went with a center back in this situation. Andrew Farrell has played fairly well this year. I think he's had better seasons in the past, but when it came to this award, I think it was clear that it was going to be Farrell.
Yeah, this was a tough one for me because, to be honest, there were historical seasons, hasn't been for a while, where they allowed goalkeepers to be voted for. And I think it would have been an easier vote if Petrovic was an option for sure. He would have kind of cleaned house on the awards.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't know that there was any Revolution player that really deserved it this year, given the Revolution defensive efforts this season. So this was a tough one for me. I went for Brandon Bai. I think it was more about his offensive performances than his defensive performances, though, kind of, you know, breaking the fullback record with 6 assists. I also, like you, went with DeJuan Jones last year. But if I could have voted for Petrovic or maybe voted for nobody, I probably would have. This was a really tough vote this year, and that I you know, again, no offense to any of the Revolution's defenders, but I think as a team, their defensive efforts this year made it hard to pick anybody. And, you know, with Andrew Farrell leading the league in penalties conceded with 4 and Henry Kessler right behind him in penalties conceded in 3 while playing way less games, the top 2 in the league, it was kind of hard to vote for anyone for that one, I have to say. Congratulations to Brad Knighton on Humanitarian of the Year. Golden Boot. Still to be decided. Gustavo Bow now in the lead with 8. Carles Hill one behind with 7. Adam Buxa, obviously not with the Revs anymore, one behind with 7. Do you think that Gustavo Bow takes this one if you're a betting man, given his 1-goal lead? And also, what did you think of Carles Hill kind of giving up the penalty kick that would have put him tied for the Golden Boot leader at the time in the lead to Vrioni so he could get his first goal?
I think it shows that Carlos Hill on his contract does not have a bonus for winning the team's Golden Boot.
I didn't think of it that way, but that's a great point.
I like seeing Carlos do it. I think he understood that Vrioni has, you know, dealt with injury and He's working his way in the team still, and he deserved that, right? You drew the penalty. So I was actually really good to see Carlos willing to give that up. I thought it really summarizes Carlos Hill as a player. He loves to facilitate, and he facilitated there. I do think Gustavo Bo ends up locking this up. Carlos is right there as well, but you have to imagine Gustavo could potentially score in Chicago. This is a player that when he scores in bunches.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's likely to be Gustavo Bo. Usually when he does get a goal, it kind of sets him on fire to score some more. So I wouldn't surprise me at all if he scored another one. And, you know, Carles, for how good of a player he is, when he's not scoring from the penalty spot, I don't think he is necessarily the most efficient finisher. And that was one of the things that kind of cost the Revs down the stretch, is they were missing Rioni and Buxa. Buxa obviously gone, Rioni obviously not fit. And with Gustavo Bo kind of not sharp up until recently, or up until this game, not finding the back of the net, a lot more pressure was kind of on Carles Hill to put the ball in the back of the net. And I think we saw finishing is not his strong point, and obviously not why he's on the roster, but I would expect Gustavo Bo to take it, you know, barring there being another penalty kick that Carles ends up taking. Academy Player of the Year, Jack P. I cannot pronounce his last name. Do you know how to pronounce it? Put you on the spot.
I do not want to offend him or his family, so I will not attempt it.
Well, congrats to him. He was just playing for the under-19 men's national team, so that's exciting. He's the guy. You think we see him signed to the Revolution first team at some point next season? Or
I would love to. I mean, he decided to go to college, which is great, right? That's the right choice. I feel like some players it's not, but you know, he made that decision with his family, and I fully, you know, obviously support that, right? So who knows, right? You could figure out the college game's right for him, plays there, gets drafted into Major League Soccer that way, or signs a homegrown deal after the fact. So I don't think we'll actually end up seeing him next year as a homegrown player.
No, I mean, he's definitely a guy that you hope the Revolution find a way to bring in at some point in the future, and don't, you know, lose him to signing for some team in Europe, or you know, I can't imagine they'd waive his rights and let him sign with another team at MLS or go through the draft. But he's an exciting guy to keep an eye on for the Revolution Academy. Always good to have players in your academy playing on the youth national team set up. And I think he started all or most of the games in that recent U19 tournament that the U.S. actually won, went 3-0-0. So exciting guy to keep an eye on, and deserving player of the Academy Player of the Year. So those were the team awards. Wow, wow, Walk Walk wants to know if Nacho Hill should be a way more useful piece going into next season.
Well, he's not under contract for next season, so I would say no. But if he's under contract, yes, because they've only had him for a couple games.
Yeah, honestly, I think the best thing to happen to him is the unknown and more extensive injury to Jory Shroudy than we expected, because I don't know that he'd be getting these minutes if that hadn't happened. And I think if there's a question mark in Bruce's mind about what his health is going to be next season, that also makes Nacho Hill much more appealing. But he's getting more extended tryout and more minutes than I think he would have gotten otherwise because of that injury. So I think at this point I would lean more likely than no that he'll be back next season, although I think it's still very much up in the air. And I think I've been more impressed with him than I expected to be. So I'm curious to see what we get from him next year. Teal Forever wants to know, what other goalkeepers other than Petrovic, assuming he's still here, do the Revolution keep next season?
Jacob Jackson and Clemente, yeah, I think. I think Brad Knighton, you know, who knows, he might retire, but you know, he hasn't really been on the roster in a while. I think Raul Edwards, you know, when he started, he had some rough games. He has some good games. He has been on the bench for the team. It's just, you look at it and you wonder what's the going to be the sassiest players. Earl Edwards and Clemente Oper are supplemental players at this point. So would Jacob Jackson. But what's their status going to be next year? I think the Revolution needs to go younger. But it all depends on Petrovic, right? If they get that transfer offer and transfer him out, they're going to have to completely reshuffle things. So I personally would think it'd be Jackson and Diop, because they brought in Diop, which I thought was interesting at the time. The fact that they already had Edwards and Knighton as veterans on the roster. So I'd imagine there's some investment there, or at least like aspirations for him to be on the roster. So I don't think they need to go crazy though at the backup.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't think anything would surprise me at this point with what they do at the backup position and who they keep. I would not expect Brad Knighton to be back. He is the one goalkeeper right now that's taking a senior roster spot other than Petrovic. And I don't think there's any reason to use the senior roster spot. Again, as good as a servant for the club Brad Knighton's been, and as good as he's been stepping up in the past, you know, he's not making the bench right now. And at 37 years old, he'll be 38 starting next season. I don't think, again, I think it's time to move on from Brad Knight and using a senior roster spot. They're too valuable to use on a third string goalkeeper. So it comes down to me. I think Jacob Jackson, you know, if they think he's going to recover well from this injury, I think there was enough promise there to bring him back another season. And then I think you see one of Earl Edwards or Clement Diop back next year, both of them in supplemental slots. The fact Earl Edwards is making the bench shows me that they have some trust in him. Now, that could just be that he's been with the team all season, so he, you know, the team knows what, you know, they know what he can bring, and he knows the system better than Clement Diop, and Clement Diop might be more of a long-term project to get him more integrated next year. But obviously, this has been kind of a lengthy trial for Clement Diop, where they've gotten to see him up close. So maybe they got to see him up close, and they decided that maybe he's not good enough. So I have trouble kind of picking between which of those two guys is back next year. You know, Clement Diop is on the supplemental roster. We heard that's because some of his salary is still being picked up. My guess is that that's probably not the case next year. So if they're not completely sold on Diop and he's going to take a senior roster spot, it would not surprise me if it's actually Earl Edwards that comes back next season. So I know I'm not giving a solid answer on this one. I'm not going to end up on cursed revs because I'm not picking, kind of skirting the line there with that one. But it's one position that I have trouble kind of figuring out who's going to be the backup next season, because I think it's a real question. And it would surprise me if Brad Knighton's back, but between Diop and Earl Edwards, you know, it would not surprise me. And this is, again, assuming Petrovic is not back. I think it'll be one of those two guys is back as the backup, as well as Jacob Jackson, unless I think is, you know, he's not going to recover well from that injury. So that's something to watch this offseason, and something that I'm not confident in what the answer is. Early question about the expansion draft. Alden wants to know who we should protect in the expansion draft, and what are our weakest positions / thinnest spots on the roster. Neither of us have had much time to put too much thought into the expansion draft. I think we're both in agreement that it's unlikely that anyone from the Revolution gets selected. Kind of set the stage. 5 players can be selected in the expansion draft. Teams can protect 12 players. They must protect at least 3 internationals if they have 4 or more. So that'd be the Revolution. Guys that are at a contract, you know, count as being on the roster for purposes of protection. Homegrown players that are under 25 are automatically protected. So Buck, Esmer, Rivera, Renix don't need to be protected. So, you know, kind of thinking, I try to quickly think through who the Revs protect. Petrovic is a no-brainer. That's 1. Carles Hill is a no-brainer. That's 2. Your back line, Andrew Farrell, Brandon By, DeJuan Jones, Henry Kessler, that puts you at 6. Then you got Matt Polster, which I think is also a no-brainer. That puts you at 7. Tommy McNamara, you know, they've signed him up long-term. Kind of giving you other options, I think he's probably a no-brainer at 8. And then, you know, we talk about Gustavo Bowe. I think if you leave him unprotected, there's a 0% chance he gets taken. So do you protect him? Or, you know, do you take the risk? Or, you know, if you want to move on from him, maybe you do take the risk. But also the other side of that is there an ego thing where, you know, hey, he's been one of your best players over the years. Do you have to protect him for that? I don't think it matters. I think they can either protect him or not protect him, and they're still not going to get anyone taken. So let's put him on the list. That's 9. Rioni, I think you obviously protect him. You've invested so much in him. Barrero, same thing. I think you protect him. That's at 11. And then, you know, for your 12th, because of how much you spent on Ismael Tajori-Shirardi, do you protect him? Probably. Or because of his injury being worse than you thought, do you leave him unprotected? And maybe look at what you did as a sunk cost. I think you probably protect him given what you invested. That's the 12 I'm going with. You know, Nacho Hill, if you re-sign him, maybe you protect him. I don't know that he's shown enough to be picked up by another team regardless. Maciel has got the long-term injury now that I think Gustavo Lopez reported. I think it was an Achilles injury. I don't think you protect him. I'm not sure he's back next year. I don't think he's shown enough for other teams to be interested in him. You know, if that's my 12, do you have, you know, without spending too much time on it, do you have any thoughts on what I got wrong or who else should be protected? And do you think there's any chance that someone on the Revs, if you do protect those 12, gets taken?
I think ITS you'd leave unprotected just for the fact that I don't think a team's going to pick him up, because the fact that he's coming off the injury, like the severity is really unknown. I think there's zero risk of leaving him unprotected and him being picked up. If they re-sign Nacho Hill, I think you would probably protect him over ITS. But that's probably pretty much it. I think it's fairly straightforward. Like, you'd actually probably want a player to be selected if you're the Revolution off your roster. Like, if you could alleviate Omar Gonzalez without using a buyout, or, you know, Altidore is on this roster too. I don't think there's any chance Altidore gets picked up in this, but I think for the Revs, you're actually secretly hoping for a player to be picked up.
Yeah, of the guys you're going to have left unprotected, I think you would be kind of hoping that one of them gets picked up to kind of make your offseason easier and more flexible. I think you have trouble given the, you know, the homegrown players that are protected, protecting more than 12 players and kind of wanting them to be back. I don't expect Kaplan to be back next season. These are things we'll talk about more in a future podcast, but. I personally am not very concerned with the Revolution having anyone picked up in the expansion draft. So regardless of who protect, I think there's not going to be too much risk there. We did get two last questions that came in late, so they're not on my template, but I did catch them before we wrapped up. Traeger Girardi wants to know, why does Bruce hate the kids?
You know, Bruce actually asked this question in the post game, in terms of why he wouldn't start Noel Buck or Dame Rivera over, you know, Nacho Hill or, you know, a player like that. Bruce said, and I quote, why this is professional soccer. We're trying to win games and we put the best group out there that could give us a result today. I think that's not a shocking answer from Bruce. I think something that you had mentioned earlier in the podcast as well, the fact that they still don't know what they have with this team, so they want to give these guys the run out in terms of Veroni and Nacho and see what they look like. So I think that's part of the reason why as well, in addition to wanting to win.
Yeah, I completely agree. Nothing to add there. I don't think Bruce hates the kids, but I also don't think historically that Bruce has been a guy that's, you know, given the younger players on his rosters that much time. And to be honest, I think, you know, Noel Buck has gotten more time this season than I expected him to, and it's been good for him. I think Esmer, you know, he gave him a shot, and I don't think Esmer is quite ready yet to get too many minutes for the first team. But I think it's the point I made earlier that Bruce doesn't know what he has, and he's, for next season, he's trying to figure that out. And, you know, there's going to be more time next year for these guys. But again, especially in the last game of the year, I think it would be valuable for Buck to at least get on the field and get some minutes. So we'll see what happens with that. Revs Devil brings up something we talked a little bit about earlier. He says, I still would like some clarity on how/why the Revs let Legette go and signed a hurt dude to replace him who is not going to play. I think the answer to why they signed the hurt dude to replace him is that apparently Bruce didn't know how hurt he was, which we've already been over. But do you have any more kind of, I think it would just be speculation about why they let Legette go, but do you have any kind of thoughts on that?
I think Legette as the player wanted. He came here, and I think he was upbeat, and I think he thought he was going to fit in, you know, reuniting with Bruce Arena. I think he ended up getting here and maybe didn't like it as much as he had hoped, playing him at a position for the primary of his tenure as well. I don't think he necessarily enjoyed that, and I think he really wanted to go back further west. I think he really wanted to go to that part of the country. Obviously, he played in L.A. for a long time, so the player clearly wanted out of here, and I think Bruce Arena is a coach that typically is more viewed as a player's coach and probably wanted to do right by Legette. I do look at the move, and it's like you're sending one of your better players who's in your starting lineup and would have been in your starting lineup for the entire year and was somewhat productive, probably not as productive as they would have liked, but productive enough. And they essentially paid another team to take him. So just in a vacuum, that was a very bad deal for the Revolution. So I do question... you know, whether or not that was the right move to make. Yeah, the player didn't want to be here, but at the end of the day, he's under contract, and you could have waited to the end of the year to move Legette. You could have said, hey, you're under contract. Unfortunately, we'll wait until the end of the year. So I kind of look at that, and I really do question that entire move. ITS, I just don't think they knew, and I think they were scrambling after they transferred Legette out and were looking for an option to fill a slot, and that's what they came across, and unfortunately, he was injured.
Yeah, I think you're right on both accounts, and just with Legette, it is an interesting one. I think, like you said, I think it was Legette that wanted the move. He was a productive player for the Revolution, and he was an available player for the Revolution, which has been a big problem this year. So that was incredibly frustrating to kind of lose him for a guy that's been injured. But I kind of go back to that press conference that he had with when he first joined the team, where he said he was expecting to play as a central attacking midfielder, and I think, you know, the thought process there was, you know, what we talked about earlier is the Revs thought they were going to be playing a 4-4-2 diamond, And he probably thought he was going to be playing as, you know, a right center mid or a left center mid just behind Carles Hill with more of an attacking style. And he wasn't happy with the fact that when he was in LA last year, he was, you know, played out in the wings and kind of played all over the place and didn't have one position. This was a guy that I got to correct myself from a few weeks ago when I talked about him and said he was the most capped player on the national team in 2021. He was actually the second most capped player on the national team and the top scorer in 2021. This was a guy that after 2021 seemed like he had a decent shot at making the U.S. men's national team. But I think we came to the Revolution thinking he'd solidify that by, you know, playing one position and doing really well. And that clearly didn't happen because Bruce, you know, moved away from that. He was playing him out on the wing. He wasn't being, you know, he's being good for the Revs, but he wasn't being quite as productive as he'd hoped. And I think he asked for this transfer to Dallas where he could play more centrally and where maybe in his mind he thought he could push to make the national team. And Bruce did him a favor. And I think it, you know, I don't think he has a legitimate shot at the national team. I think that's very clear. He doesn't, but maybe he thought he did. I don't think he ever did at this point. And I think Bruce did him a favor, and I think he hurt the Revolution in doing so. And like you said, he was under contract, and it's great to help guys when they want to go, but you know, you helped Adam Buxa when he wanted to go, you helped Matt Turner when he wanted to go, you know, you helped Tejan Buchanan when he wanted to go. Josie Altidore wanted that move to Mexico. That was kind of a mutual beneficial thing for the Revolution to move on from him. You can only do that to so many players and keep your team intact. And it's important reputationally given, you know, especially given the Revolution historically before Bruce Arena were known as a team that sometimes would stop guys from going. You know, they stopped Taylor Twellman going way back. They stopped Shari Joseph from going overseas going way back. You know, a number of guys that maybe they didn't necessarily let move when they wanted to move. And Bruce Arena has kind of done the opposite and made done right by his players. But at some point, you kind of got to draw the line and you know, hey, we signed you for this season. We need you for this season. And that was a particularly disappointing move because it was the one offseason move, you know, other that the Revolution made that actually mostly panned out. But I agree with you. If he had stuck with the Revolution and the Revolution had kept him, I think we would, you know, still be at least talking about the Revolution pushing for a playoff spot on decision day next weekend.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, legit, he very well performs. I mean, I really do think that if you looked at him and he played the entire year with the Revolution, they might have been in that conversation. If you just look at what he's done with FC Dallas since he went there, he's played in 9 games. He has 5 assists. He's been a very productive player for them. So he was a productive player for the Revs. He had 5 assists and 2 goals in 19 games. With FC Dallas, he's, you know, playing with Paul Arriola. He's playing with Jesus Ferreira, so a little bit better attacking options as well. But I do wonder Bruce's decision-making. I think if you look at last offseason, the moves he made, he brought in Omar Gonzalez, Sebastian Legette, Ozzy Altidore. These are players that he knows very personally. Obviously, he brought in Della Garza the previous year, Boateng. So it feels like Bruce is either bringing in players that he knows personally, or he's relying on these other accounts of players for like Arnor Trusteson, or Veroni or ITS. So he's either getting bad advice or he's making a personal decision to bring in a player that he knows. So I think it's very clear to me, at least, that there's a very big confusion right now in terms of personnel and making the right acquisitions for the team. And I think Legette looked like it was the right move, and then they ended up making the transfer out to FC Dallas. So there has to be a happy balance, right? You can't hold on to a player for too long, and you have to do right by the player, but also you have to do right by the team. And I feel like the player has come above the team, at least this season for the Revolution.
Yeah, I agree. And again, when you factor in the injuries and everything, it almost seems like these moves are more about, you know, helping out the players, but also thinking about next season rather than this season. And you know, I've talked about it before on the podcast, but you know, when you have a season where you have Carles Hill stay healthy the entire year, that's quite the blessing and something that you don't want to throw away, because that's never guaranteed, especially as he turns 30 next year. So, you know, it's I don't know. That move in particular was one, especially when you're replacing with an injured guy, that kind of throwing away your season, in some sense, to benefit a player. And maybe Bruce thought that they would find a way to make the playoffs anyways and make a run. But I have a lot of questions about that move in particular during the summer window. Any final thoughts on this game? We do have a couple of bit of news I want to talk about, but any final thoughts on this one before I move on?
Nope, no more thoughts.
Two news items I wanted to mention. Carrie Heistad, long-term Revs photographer, announced that she is not going to be taking pictures of the Revs next year. Just wanted to give a shout-out to her. She was a big part of New England Soccer Today back when we ran that website. Fantastic photographer. Going to be disappointed not having her take photographs of the Revs next year. U.S. amputee soccer team playing in the World Cup right now. Be sure to check that out. They got a big win In their first game, tied for first place in the group right now, play Argentina on Sunday. I don't know if you listen to this podcast in time, you might be able to watch that, but congrats to them. It's definitely worth paying attention to that. And Tanner, before we wrap up, how can people find your writing and follow you on social media?
Yeah, they can check out trifectanetworksports.com to get all my writing. And then on social media, it is at Tanner Ribello.
Make sure to follow Tanner. There are not enough good people covering the Revs, and Tanner does a fantastic job. So be sure to check him out and check out Trifecta Sports. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean L. Donahue, and of course, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Revolution Recap. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you listen. Also, check out our friends at the Bet Musket. Thanks again for listening, and thanks, Tanner, for joining us. We'll be back next week with a wrap-up after the Revolution's final game, and we'll be having probably some off-season podcasts, too, where we discuss the roster in greater details and probably expansion drafts in greater detail than we did today.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.